Speak with you this morning. I thought this morning we would spend some time studying Joseph and God's work with Joseph, and we're going to begin this morning in Acts chapter 7. This was when Stephen was before the council in Jerusalem. He had been brought before them, and he is reviewing God's plan that he had for his children, and he's walking through that plan that begins with Abraham and ends with Christ, and he's going to make the point at the end of that lesson that they have crucified the Son of God. But we want to read a particular part of this and focus in this morning on Joseph. But let's begin in verse 2 and we'll read through verse 10 to see what he says here about Joseph. And he said, "Men, brethren, and fathers, hearken. The God of glory appeared unto our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia before he dwelt in Charan, and said unto him, Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and come into the land which I shall show thee. Then came he out of the land of the Chaldeans and dwelt in Charan, and from thence, when his father was dead, he removed him into this land wherein you now dwell. And he gave him none inheritance in it, no, not so much as to set his foot on. Yet he promised that he would give it to him for a possession, and to his seed after him, when as yet he had no child. And God spake on this wise, that his seed should sojourn in a strange land, and that they should bring them into bondage, and entreat them evil 400 years. And the nation to whom they shall be in bondage will I judge, said God, and after that they shall come forth and serve me in this place. And he gave him the covenant of circumcision. And so Abraham begat Isaac, and circumcised him the eighth day. And Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob begat the 12 patriarchs. And the patriarchs, moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt. But God was with him and delivered him out of all his afflictions and gave him favor and wisdom in the sight of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And he made him governor over Egypt and all his house." So we see here that as Stephen is beginning this lesson before this council, that he begins with Abraham. We see in verse 5 the promise that, and he reminds them of that promise which they all knew from the Old Testament. We're not going to go back there this morning, but Genesis chapter 15 and verses 13 and 14 is where the Lord appeared to Abraham and spoke to Abraham of this plan that he had, that he was going to, that he wanted Abraham to come out of the land that he lived in. He showed him the land of Canaan, but he said before they would inherit that land, that they would go into a strange country, that they would be in bondage for 400 years, and then they would be brought forth to the land of Canaan to serve him. So this plan that God had was going to unfold over approximately 2,000 years before Christ came. And there were many, many parts to that plan, but we were going to zoom in this morning on this part that Joseph has in this plan, and a particular part of his life that spans about 22 years as we'll read through it. And we want to learn from this example of Joseph and how Joseph responded to all of the things that happened to him, realizing that all of this was part of God's working and that God ultimately delivered Joseph and gave Joseph favor and wisdom in all of these situations, and that Joseph was faithful in believing God's promises and carrying out the things that he knew God wanted him to do. In Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 22, Joseph is mentioned here in this chapter on faith. It says here, "By faith Joseph, when he died, made mention of the departing of the children of Israel and gave commandment concerning his bones." Now, there's not a lot said here about Joseph. There's one sentence here in verse 22. But let's think about the implications, and let's think about why would God mention Joseph here in this chapter of those who were faithful. Well, it says that Joseph made mention of the departure of the children of Israel. And we ask the question, well, so what does that mean? Well, you know, if we think about that, we understand that Joseph fully believed that promise that God had given to Abraham back in Genesis chapter 15. And Joseph fully believed that, yes, they were going to be down in Egypt, but that they weren't going to be there forever, and that they were going to go back, that God, this was all part of God's plan that he was carrying out. And so Joseph believed these promises that God had given, And Joseph was diligent to do his part in fulfilling the Lord's will in whatever situation he was in. And we need to apply Joseph's example to ourselves, realizing that God has a purpose for each of us in this life. And he has a purpose for us to be conformed to the image of Christ, as we all know from Romans chapter 8 and verse 28. And he's working with each of us as he worked with Joseph to carry out that plan. And we need to be diligent to be faithful in remembering that purpose and that plan that he has for us, and in responding in the right way in all the situations that we're in. So let's go back to Genesis chapter 37 now and look at Joseph. This is when he was 17 years old, and we'll see the situation that Joseph was in that led to a very, very long series of events over the next few years. Genesis 37, beginning in verse 1, it says, "And Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was a son of his old age. And he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field. And lo, my sheaf arose and stood upright. And behold, your sheaves stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf. And his brethren said unto him, Shalt thou indeed reign over us? Or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. And he dreamed yet another dream and told his brethren and said, Behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to the earth? And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the same. Well, it's interesting that the question is asked, Shall I and thy mother and brethren indeed come to bow ourselves down to the earth? And of course, we'll see the answer is yes, that the Lord had sent those dreams to Joseph. And yes, indeed, they were going to bow down to Joseph when he was in Egypt. But of course, they didn't know that at this time, and they didn't know what the Lord was getting ready to carry out. But also notice the response of Jacob here, how it says that his father observed this saying. So he didn't have that same response that Joseph's brothers did in envying him and hating him, and he kept this saying in mind of what Joseph had said. Now, his brothers were not going to go and read that whole story this morning, but we know that Joseph's brothers were envious of him, and ultimately they sold him as a slave into Egypt. In Genesis chapter 37, verses 27 and 28, we see them carrying out their plan here. They say, Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh. And his brethren were content. Then there passed by Midianite merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit, and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they brought Joseph into Egypt. And then further down in verse 36, we see what happens further. It says, The Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and captain of the guard. So here was all this time that Joseph had been hated of his brothers. And remember, it said earlier, they could not speak peaceably unto him. And now they've come and they've sold him literally as a slave that has been carried down to Egypt and sold to serve this Potiphar, who is one of the officers of Pharaoh. Now, it's easy for us to just keep reading and overlook how we would have felt in this situation. What would we have thought if our own brothers had done something like this? What would we have thought if we had been sold as a slave? You know, there might be a lot of different responses that different ones would have. We might be tempted just to despair and to give up at all the terrible things that had happened and had been done. We might be tempted to be angry and to seek vengeance. Some might even be tempted to be angry at God and asking, why are these things happening to me like this? But we need to be reminded that this was all part of God's working with Joseph and his working to carry out this larger plan that he had promised to Abraham back in Genesis chapter 15. But just by looking at the situation that Joseph was in, who would have guessed that this was all part of that plan? And we see many, many things today that we wonder, why are these things happening? And we need to be reminded that the Lord is working and that it may not be apparent at all what the Lord is getting ready to execute. We could look at many of these next things that we're getting ready to see here about Joseph and say, well, how does this factor into being a part of what God was going to do? And it would not have been apparent at all. And so we need to be reminded that he is working and that we, in whatever situation we're in, need to respond as Joseph did here. We'll move on into Genesis chapter 39, where Joseph is a steward in Potiphar's house. We'll see how things went for him in verses 1 through 6. It says here, "And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord had made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house and over all that he had put into his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. And he knew not aught that he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored." We see here in verse 2 that the Lord was with Joseph. We need to be always reminded that the Lord is with us as well. Hebrews chapter 13, verses 5 and 6, he says here, "Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have, for he has said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee, so that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me." You know, when we're in situations that seem like difficult situations, we need to be reminded that the Lord is not going to forsake us. And Joseph understood that, and Joseph was diligent as he was there, even as a slave in the house of Potiphar, to do the things that he knew were right. And he found grace in the eyes of God because of that, and the Lord blessed him in the eyes of Potiphar. And of course, we all know that the Lord can bless us in the situations that we're in as well. And we can be reminded of what he tells us in Romans chapter 8, in verse 31, where he says, "If God be for us, who can be against us?" No matter what situation we're in, if we're doing God's will, we can know that he is there, not leaving us, and that he will continue to help us. And the Lord was with Joseph here, as a slave under Potiphar. And notice how Potiphar, he buys Joseph as a slave, but he sees the faithfulness in Joseph, and he's literally put everything he has into Joseph's hand. Can you imagine putting everything you had into the hands of a stranger to oversee, somebody that you had literally purchased as a slave? But Potiphar, again, saw that faithfulness that Joseph had to God and that faithfulness he had in doing what was right. And he left all, like it said there in verse 6, he left all that he had in Joseph's hand and knew not aught that he had. He didn't even know everything that he had at that point because he had put Joseph over all of those things. Now we'll see that the Lord is going to bring a test on Joseph in the next few verses. in verses 7 and 8, we see that Potiphar's wife now tries to tempt Joseph to commit adultery. In verse 7, it said, "It came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, 'Lie with me.' But he refused and said unto his master's wife, 'Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is none greater in the house than I, neither has he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?'" So once again, we see Joseph being faithful when he is tested here. This was a temptation that was presented to him. And she, notice in verse 10, she continued. She didn't just try this one time, but in verse 10 it says, she spake to Joseph day by day, continually trying to tempt him to do wrong. And finally, there was a day where in verse 12, she caught him. It says, she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. Now, this is a response that we all need to consider well in, when we are tempted. What was Joseph's approach, finally, to this temptation that he had been faced with? Well, you know, he literally got himself out of that situation. He fled from that situation to not be given to that temptation from his wife. We need to consider Joseph's faithfulness here for ourselves. And when we're tempted by something, we need to get ourselves away from that thing that is tempting us. And it could, of course, be many forms. But here we see Joseph physically fleeing the scene so that he would no longer be tempted. Now, of course, Potiphar's wife was a wicked woman. And so she turns around then and makes false accusations against Joseph to her husband. In verse 19, it says, "It came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, 'After this manner did thy servant to me,' that his wrath was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in the prison." So was there any justice here? You know, Joseph had been falsely accused and put in prison for it. Was this fair? And again, we need to be reminded, who is in control in this situation? Of course, we all know that God is the one that is in control, but it leads to that question, well, why would God have allowed Joseph to be falsely accused and to now be thrown in prison? So it just seems like it's gone from bad to worse for Joseph, because he had been sold as a slave by his brothers, and now he's in prison. Well, of course, this is where many people misunderstand God's work, and we don't need to fall into that trap. We need to be reminded that the Lord is working with all of us, and one of the things that the Lord brings about is suffering in order for us to grow. In 1 Peter chapter 2, we often read this during the Lord's Supper when we're thinking about Jesus and about his sacrifice and about that example that he's left for us. We often read this to encourage ourselves to be willing to follow in those same steps. Here it says, "Servants, be subject to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the froward." And of course, this is very applicable to Joseph in this case. Here he's just been falsely accused and thrown in prison for not having done anything wrong. In verse 19, he says, "For this is thankworthy, if a man for conscience toward God endure grief, suffering wrongfully. For what glory is it if when you be buffeted for your faults, you shall take it patiently? But if when you do well and suffer for it, you take it patiently, this is acceptable with God." This is how we get God's favor, when we're willing to do right, even when things are difficult, even when, in Joseph's case, even when he was thrown in prison here. We need to be reminded that Jesus himself, as it says in Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 8, it says, "Though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered." We do learn obedience through these things that we suffer. And so we see the Lord working here with Joseph. You know, the Lord could have just short-circuited all of these things that were happening with Joseph, and he could have brought the children of Israel down into Egypt through some other means. But he didn't. And we realize that he's working with Joseph here as well, and that Joseph is growing through these things, and that he is being prepared for additional things that are coming. If we go back to Genesis chapter 39, now Joseph is in the prison. In verse 21 of chapter 39, it says, "But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper." So now we see that Joseph is in prison, but what happens? Well, very, very similar to him being in the house of Potiphar, Joseph is now, as a prisoner, being put in charge over the other prisoners. Well, once again, we should ask ourselves, how would I have responded if that were me in that situation that had been put in prison? Here is Joseph now surrounded by many of those who were there for a reason, even though Joseph was not. And yet Joseph continued to show himself to be a faithful steward in even tougher circumstances than in Potiphar's house. Think about the group of people he was now with, and now he's been put in charge over those people. You know, we realize that prisons aren't places where you find, you know, nice, cuddly, friendly people, right? These are people that would have been very, very difficult to manage and to deal with. But yet, if we think about it, we understand that the Lord is also using this situation as a way to further prepare Joseph for what he is getting ready to do later. And Joseph continues to be faithful even with these prisoners. And it's very interesting in verse 23, a very similar statement to what Potiphar had done. It says, "The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand." So this prison keeper had complete trust in Joseph, that Joseph was faithful and that Joseph was going to do what was right, even in these circumstances. We can be reminded of what Paul said in Philippians chapter 4, beginning in verse 10. Here he says, "But I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at the last your care of me is flourished again, wherein you were also careful, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak of in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me." So the Apostle Paul, as we know, also underwent many situations where he was in prison. He was in different situations where he was being threatened and sought after to be killed. And what had he learned from those things and those situations that he had been in? Well, he says here, "I have learned in whatsoever state I am to be content." And Paul knew how to use those situations that he was in to abound and to do the Lord's work. And we see Joseph doing something very similar here as he's in these different situations. Now, as we continue on in Genesis to see how things unfold, we realize in the early verses of chapter 40 that the Pharaoh, in verses 1 to 3, had put his butler and his baker both into this prison where Joseph was bound, as it says there in verse 3. And then later, they both have dreams. And so, in verse 8, Joseph is going to interpret the dreams of the butler and the baker. In verse 8, he says, "They said unto him, We have dreamed a dream, and there's no interpreter of it. And Joseph said unto them, Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you." And so they tell their dreams to Joseph. And, of course, God gives Joseph the interpretation of those dreams. And in verse 13, he tells the butler, he says, "Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head and restore thee unto thy place. And thou shalt deliver Pharaoh's cup into his hand, after the former manner when thou wast his butler. And then Joseph asks the butler to do something for him when he goes back to Pharaoh. In verse 14 he says, "But think on me when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention to me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house." So he wants the butler to tell Pharaoh about him once he returns. Of course, he also goes on to tell the baker's dream as well, and how the baker really has an opposite outcome. In verse 19, he tells the baker, "Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head from off thee, and shall hang thee on a tree, and the birds shall eat thy flesh from off thee." So the baker, no doubt, was not as pleased to hear the interpretation of his dream. But, of course, this was the Lord's will. And we see both of these events coming to pass 3 days later, as he had said. And in verse 21 of chapter 40, it says, "Pharaoh restored the chief butler to his butlership again." Verse 22, "He hanged the chief baker." But unfortunately, we see in verse 23, it says, "Yet did not the butler remember Joseph, but forgot him." So just when you're thinking that Joseph is going to be able to be released from prison here, Joseph is given another test to be patient. And it turns out that it's going to go on for another 2 years that Joseph is going to be in the prison. If we continue on into chapter 41, it says, "It came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh dreamed." So Pharaoh now has a dream 2 years later. And that is going to be what reminds the butler about Joseph. And the butler then is going to tell Pharaoh about Joseph, and that he was able to correctly interpret the dreams that he and the baker had had. So Pharaoh has two dreams here. One is about these lean-fleshed cows that come and eat up the seven fat-fleshed cows. And then he has another dream that the seven thin ears of corn come and devour up the seven full ears of corn. And in verse 8 of chapter 41, it says, "It came to pass in the morning that Pharaoh's spirit was troubled. And he sent and called for the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men thereof. And Pharaoh told them his dream, but there was none that can interpret them unto Pharaoh." And so then the butler remembers that he had forgotten about Joseph. In verse 14, it says, "Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him out hastily out of the dungeon. And he shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto Pharaoh." And of course, Pharaoh asks him to interpret that dream. And all through this, we continue to see Joseph's faithfulness. Notice in verse 16, "Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, It is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace." Now think about one of the temptations that Joseph would have had. Here he was before Pharaoh. He has an opportunity to be released from the prison now. There would have been a temptation for anyone there to try to lift themselves up in Pharaoh's eyes, so that Pharaoh would have looked favorably upon them. And so Pharaoh's called Joseph to interpret his dream, and Joseph is very careful to make sure that he is giving God all the credit for this ability to interpret this dream. He doesn't try to take this upon himself and to lift himself up in Pharaoh's eyes. And so he goes on to explain these dreams that Pharaoh has. In verse 29, he says, "Behold, there shall come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. And there shall arise after them 7 years of famine." So he explains to Pharaoh how these dreams represent the next 14 years that are getting ready to transpire in Egypt, and how there's going to be a time of plenty for 7 years, and then a time of famine. And so in verse 33, he says, "Now therefore let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt." And so Pharaoh considers this, and he ultimately comes back and says, well, what he says in verse 39, he says unto Joseph, "For as much as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according to unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, see, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. So we've gone from being a slave over and given charge over Potiphar's household to being a slave that was put in prison and being given charge over the prisoners to now being put over all of Egypt. So we can now see perhaps some of the reasoning or the purpose that God had in having Joseph serve in these different roles over these last several years. Think about what he was preparing Joseph to do here. Joseph was 30 years old. Verse 46, Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. So it had been 13 years that Joseph had been a slave from the time that his brothers had sold him until now, when he has been put up over all of Egypt. And of course, as the Lord had said, he's bringing these things to pass. And they have these 7 years of plenty, and then the 7 years of famine begin. And ultimately, his brothers come to seek for food because the famine is everywhere. And so if we fast forward to Genesis chapter 45, we see here where Joseph ultimately reveals himself to his brothers. And we need to note the things that Joseph points out to his brothers as he reveals himself to them and they realize what has happened. Beginning in verse 1 of chapter 45, it says, then Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him, and he cried, cause every man to go out from me. And there stood no man with him while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. So here all of this time they thought that Joseph had been sold, and now all of a sudden he is the one that they've been coming to for food, and he's revealed himself to them, and they're very troubled, of course, realizing what they've done and realizing what he could do to them at this point. And so in verse 4 it says, Joseph said unto his brethren, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near, and he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. So you can just sort of see the disbelief on their faces as he's telling them, I'm Joseph, your brother. And so he tells them the second time, I'm Joseph, your brother, who you sold into Egypt. Now, of course, they might be sweating a little bit right now, right? That last part that he said, whom you sold into Egypt. And they might be wondering, well, what's he getting ready to do with us for doing that? But the answer that he provides, or that he continues, is completely unexpected for them. In verse 5, he says, now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that you sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. So notice here in verse 5, he tells them, don't be grieved with yourselves, don't be angry with yourselves. And who does he credit here for this whole situation? There in verse 5, he says, God did send me before you to preserve life. And then he goes on. He says, for these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in which there shall neither be earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. So 3 times here, he tells his brothers, God sent me before you to preserve life. It's not you that's done this. So Joseph fully realizes that even the terrible things that have happened to him, him being sold as a slave and sent to Egypt and serving under Potiphar and then being put in prison, all of those things he gives credit to where credit belongs, which is to God, because he understands that all of these things that happened were part of God's plan for Joseph. In Genesis chapter 46, we'll see here where the Lord appears to Israel to tell him this was all part of his plan. Genesis 46, verses 1 to 3, he said, "And Israel took his journey with all that he had, and he came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices unto the God of his father Isaac. And God spake unto Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, Here am I. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation." So Israel, or Jacob, is unsure of exactly what all of this means. And so God speaks to him and tells him and encourages him, don't fear to go down to Egypt. He says, I will make of you a great nation. So this was part of God's plan, and Joseph fully understood that. And no matter what situation Joseph was in, he served the Lord in those situations, and he was content in those situations. And it's a very great example for us to have in mind as we go through our lives, and we each face difficult situations from time to time. We always need to remember that the Lord's not going to forsake us either, and that he's working with us. Ephesians chapter 1, we need to be reminded of his work. Ephesians 1, verses 9 through 11, says, "Having made known unto us the mystery of his will, according to his good pleasure, which he has purposed in himself, that in the dispensation of the fullness of times he might gather together in one all things in Christ, which are in heaven and which are in earth, even in him, in whom also we have obtained an inheritance, being predestinated according to the purpose of him who worketh all things after the counsel of his own will." We need to constantly remind ourselves that God is working all things after the counsel of his own will. God has determined that he's going to make certain things happen, and that he works to make those things happen. And just as he had given Abraham that promise in Genesis chapter 15 about what was going to happen to his people, we saw him carry out that, and Joseph was part of what he used to do that. And we need to consider that we are part of what God is using to carry out his plan today. 2 Timothy chapter 2, let's read verses 20 and 21 here. Here he tells us, "In a great house are not only vessels of gold and of silver, but also of wood and of earth, some to honor and some to dishonor. If a man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified and meet for the master's use, and prepared unto every good work." We need to be thinking of ourselves as vessels in the Lord's house. And we need to be thinking, well, what kind of vessel do I want to be? I want to be a valuable, an honorable vessel in the Lord's eyes. I want to be one that is sanctified, one that's set apart for him, that he can use to accomplish his good work, just as he did with Joseph. Finally, let's turn to Titus chapter 2. This is the kind of people that he wants for himself, that the Lord wants for himself. And this is the kind of life that he wants all of us to be living. Titus 2, beginning in verse 11, he says, "For the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world, looking for that blessed hope and the glorious appearing of the great God and our Savior, Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto himself a peculiar people zealous of good works." And so let's keep this purpose in mind that God does have for us, that he wants each of us to be a peculiar people zealous of good works. He wants us to not be taken in by this world. He wants us to be denying ungodliness and worldly lusts. And he wants us to live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world, because he wants us to be thinking about that eternal world to come, and that our hope would be set on that and not in this life. And we see that exemplified in Joseph and how Joseph lived his life. And so I hope we'll all be encouraged to consider that example. And if you've not yet put on Christ and you've not yet begun to run that race and to live that life that the Lord wants all of us to live, we want you to consider the steps that you need to take to begin to do that, that you need to repent, to have that different mind, that new mind that says, I'm here to serve my Creator and to live for Him and to do His will, and that you crucify that old man in baptism and rise to walk in newness of life, a life that is going to serve and glorify God. If you've not done this, we would ask that you would come forward as we stand and sing this morning.